Well, next up on The World and Everything in It, the Monday Money Beat.
It's time now to talk business, markets, and the economy with financial analyst and advisor David Bahnsen. David is head of the wealth management firm, the Bahnsen Group, and he joins us this morning. David, hi.
Well, good morning, Nick. Good to be with you.
Before we get into listener questions this week, David, let's talk jobs for just a moment. On Friday, the Labor Department report for the month of January came out. It was noteworthy. More than 500,000 new jobs added, and that is strong in and of itself, but it trounced expectations. Employers added almost three times more jobs than were expected.
Yeah, I mean, it would be impossible for someone to spin it into something that wasn't overwhelmingly constructive. And there are seasonal adjustments that make all this a little tricky. There were upward revisions to the last two jobs report that amounted to another, I think, 72,000 jobs on top of the 517,000 that were reported for the month of January. And as you say, that was about triple what was expected. So across the board, it was a very positive report. And unlike November and December, where those looking to try to find something under the hood negative, and you could see that there was a very slight decline of hours worked, average hours worked had declined November, December for the first time in a while. That picked up by 1.2% month over month in January. So I believe that that mismatch between the amount of open positions and the amount of people looking for work, it continues to be the issue and should be taken as a net positive in the present state of the economy.
Also, David, the Federal Reserve hiked up interest rates last week, just a quarter point this time, but Fed Chairman Jay Powell indicated there's still more to come. This is eight in a row, and it leads into a question we received from Alan Hahn of Farmington Hills, Michigan, the Detroit area. He wants to know, why is the Fed continuing to raise rates and punishing the consumer when it seems the problem is too much spending by the federal government? In other words, isn't this primarily a fiscal problem and not a monetary problem? He concludes with appreciation, David, for your level-headed approach and advice.
Well, I'm not sure that those two are all separated. I mean, at the end of the day, the fiscal problem is also an argument for the Fed to be cutting rates, because the more the government borrows and spends, the higher cost of debt they have. And eventually, that is exactly my position as to why we're going to see significant downward pressure in interest rates, because as we've learned time and time again, the central bank has to end up enabling what happens out of fiscal activity, and the government can't afford the debt it's taken on. So the Fed is not likely to raise rates much from here. I think the quarter point they just did was quite token. And the next quarter point may or may not happen. The futures are pretty split on that. The futures market is predicting a 50-50 chance either way. And then I don't see many increases after that. And in fact, I happen to believe there will probably be some cuts by the end of the year shortly thereafter.
Let me toss this in, David. I saw lots of speculation on the business news wires last week after the softer rate increase and Jay Powell's comments on Wednesday, that there is now a better chance that the Fed will succeed in engineering a so-called soft landing and avoiding a recession. What do you say?
Well, I don't want to accept the premise of the question, Nick, because I don't think that they can engineer anything. I think that they could have, I think we, our country might very well avoid recession, and I think we very well might end up with a soft landing, but I don't think that's the same as believing the Fed will engineer it, as if 12 people sitting around a conference table can engineer the economic interactions of 330 million people and control the varying degrees of supply and demand that go into economic output. It's a very complicated endeavor, and we shouldn't be trying to control it to the degree that we are. But right. Nevertheless, the question as to whether or not a recession is a foregone conclusion is one I've been tackling quite a bit over the last several weeks. I devoted an entire Dividend Cafe to both sides of the argument 2 weeks ago, And I continue to believe that nobody knows for sure. And right now, seeing the ISM services this month increase quite nicely when there had been a decline on the manufacturing side, seeing the jobs number, there's just conflicting data there, and yet there's plenty of reason for people to hope we can avoid a severe recession.
All right, David, here's a question from listener Bretta McAllister asking about parental leave.
Hi, my name is Bretta, and I live in Western Massachusetts. Recently, quite a few members of my family have had babies, myself included, and our different companies that our husbands or spouses work for provide different benefits for parental leave, some of them being as far as 12 weeks of parental leave after a baby is born. And I just had a hard time settling on how, as believers, we should look at this kind of leave. I know you talk a lot about the fact that the economy is driven by the production level instead of consumption. And so if workers are leaving the workforce for up to 12 weeks after a baby is born, is that not a good contribution to society? Or does the fact that a child is being brought in as another form of production, which might sound weird to say, is that also a good? And the time that a family gets to spend together after that? I just have had a hard time wrapping my mind around how I view those kinds of things and would love to hear your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that part of it depends on what it is we're trying to solve for. Like, are we asking about if the government should be mandating parental leave, they should be subsidizing parental leave? I think those are sort of different questions. Certainly the idea of there being a leave for a mother after having a baby, I have no problem with, and I think it's a wonderful thing for there to be extended time with a mother and a baby after delivery. If the question has to do with the newer phenomena, and it really is quite new, maybe about 6 years out of the last 6,000 years that we're talking about paternity leave, where we're asking for the father, who is obviously not involved in nursing and was not involved in delivery, for them to be subsidized with 12 weeks of paid leave from the workforce. I have different opinions there. And the reason is not only the kind of obvious natural and biological distinction, but also I'm a traditionalist. I put a high value on history, and some things that were not done well, we should always strive to do better. But the idea that somehow it did not work to have dads returning to work a little quicker than moms over the years, I think there's a high burden of proof to get there. And so there's something about forced paternity leave that I feel differently about. The one thing I would say in her, I think, kind of parenthetical part of the question is, should we view the child as sort of a production of a good itself? And that I certainly do not. I think that what we're talking about is just a different sphere of God's kingdom, that I believe in the sphere of family, the sphere of church, and the marketplace, and these are kind of distinct from one another. And each family is able to kind of wrestle through what makes most sense for their situation. All things being equal, I tend to believe the government doesn't need to be a huge part of that.
David, one final question. This one from Brian Lawrence of Hamilton, Ontario, up in Canada. He has a question about American public policy on the economy. He says he remembers the contract with America that Republicans promised when they took control of Congress in the 1990s. It included a balanced budget amendment, and he writes this: I realize that you are an economist, not a political analyst or historian, but can you tell us what happened?
Well, let me refresh everyone's memory about what did happen there, because there was a part of their commitment that did come through, and there was a part that did not. And the reason is that our United States Constitution requires a two-thirds vote to change the Constitution. So their specific verbiage back in the Gingrich 1990s contract with America was to restore fiscal responsibility to an out-of-control Congress, requiring them to live under the same budget constraints as families and businesses. And they proposed doing that with a line item veto and then a balanced budget amendment. Mm-hmm. And the line item veto would allow the president to strike specific spending provisions and bills without having to veto the entire bill, and then that could effectively eliminate unnecessary wasteful spending. That passed both the House and Senate. But the balanced budget amendment never had the two-thirds vote. And yet, in fairness to both the Congress at the time and the Clinton administration, they did achieve a balanced budget for a couple of years and, in fact, ran a bit of a surplus, largely on pre-9/11 defense cuts, but also really excessive growth of revenue as the economy was expanding. So that's sort of the history of what happened. We have never had the two-thirds vote in the Senate necessary to get a balanced budget amendment required, but they did pass the line item veto, which was somewhat effective at certain points in time. But I have to point out, it's hard for a line item veto to be very effective if the president on either party doesn't use it.
Got to use it. That's the key to the benefit there. All right, that is all of our time for this week. If you have a question for David Bahnsen, please do send it to me at feedback@worldandeverything.com. It can be an email or an audio file attachment using your voice memo app on your smartphone. Regardless, the email address is feedback@worldandeverything.com. David Bahnsen is founder, managing partner, and chief investment officer of the Bahnsen Group. Check out his latest project at fulltimebook.com. That's three words, full time book, no spaces, fulltimebook.com. David, thanks.
Thanks so much, Nick.